So this is the meaning of this last para, where it says those who cultivate just non-discursive attention without stabilizing their attention on other objects of meditation such as the divine body, bring to mind the personal instruction, stabilize your mind without thinking of any object at all. So this non-distraction is synonymous with mindfulness that does not forget the object of meditation. And many different types of mindfulness are explained in Dzogchen practice. So this is the presentation of one's own system. Next is eliminating the flawed methods of flawed traditions. There are misconceptions to dispel, such as the following: wrong position. If you set your consciousness at a high level, as you have explained above, and then tightly stabilize it without discursiveness, there will indeed not be even the slightest fault of laxity. However, since this increases excitement, you will see that you cannot prolong stability, and your elevated consciousness is brought down, as you will see the relaxing. See that relaxing a well-tightened mind quickly leads to stability. This technique is a great personal instruction. Reply: with a sense of assurance, these words proclaim in a loud voice, good relaxation is good meditation. Yet they fail to differentiate laxity and meditation. Thus, as I explained above, flawless concentration must have two features. The firm stability of non-discursive attention does not alone suffice. Wrong position. At that time, laxity is when your mind darkens and becomes clouded. Without this, your mind has a limpid clarity, so your concentration is flawless. Reply: as this statement does not differentiate lethargy and laxity, I will elaborate on them later. Thus, if you use an intense cognition that is too tight, you may have clarity, but excitement will predominate, so that it will be hard to develop stability. If you sustain your meditation after becoming greatly relaxed, then you may have stability, but laxity will predominate, so that there is no vivid intensity. It is therefore very hard to find the right balance of tension so as to be neither too taut nor too relaxed. And for this reason, it is hard to develop a concentration free from laxity and excitement. With this in mind, the Master Chandogoni stated in the Prayers of Confession, if I use exertion, excitement arises. If I abandon it, slackness ensues. It is hard to find the right balance in this. What should I do with my troubled mind? The meaning of this is as follows. Use exertion means your mind is too tight. When you do this, excitement arises. When you let the tightness go and relax too much, you produce slackness, with your attention remaining inward, so it is difficult to find the proper balance for an even state of mind free from the laxity of excitement. And therefore, Chandogomin says it is hard to find a concentration that is the right balance or midway practice free from the two extremes of laxity and excitement. If getting quite relaxed were adequate, there would not be any problem at all. Since the text says that this leads to laxity, it's obviously important to use this method to achieve concentration. It's not enough to have the clarity, which is simply the limpid quality of a very relaxed mind. There also must be a degree of tightness in the way you apprehend the object. In this discussion of the method used in the first two of the nine mental states, when Kamala Shila says your mind very clearly sees, he does not mean only that the object is clear. He means that your mind's way of apprehending the object is clear and firm. The above-mentioned way of maintaining mindfulness is extremely important. Without knowing it, your meditation will show a great number of faults, such as slipping into great forgetfulness, commensurate with the amount of your meditation or dulling the wisdom that differentiates phenomena. Nevertheless, you mistakenly presume that you have a solid concentration. Question: while mindfulness fixes your attention on the object of meditation, as explained above, is it appropriate to monitor your meditation and think about whether you are holding the object of meditation well? Answer: you have to do this for Kamala Shila's second stage of meditation states. After you have thus set your attention on whatever your chosen object of meditation may be, fix it here continuously. While you stay right with the object, analyze and investigate your mind, thinking, is my mind befriending the object of meditation well, or is it lax, or is it distracted by the appearance of external objects? It is not that you stop your concentration and then look at your mind. Rather, while maintaining your state of concentration, you just look to see whether your attention is staying where it was previously set on the preliminary object of meditation, and if it is not, whether there is a laxity or excitement. After you have settled into concentration, you monitor this at moderate intervals, neither too often nor too seldom. If you do this while the intensity and force of the previous awareness are not quite gone, it takes place within the perspective of this awareness. This has the purpose of both enabling long-lasting, intense stability and letting you quickly recognize laxity and excitement. Accordingly, this is how you sustain your mindfulness for a necessary course of powerful and continuous mindfulness, sustaining your meditation by repeatedly reminding yourself at intervals of the intended object of meditation, as Asanga's Sharvaka level says. Therefore, you maintain mindfulness to stop forgetfulness wherein you stray from the object of meditation. Hence, non-forgetfulness of the object of meditation wherein forgetfulness is stopped is when you mentally express the object of meditation. You bring the object of meditation to mind again and again. For example, when you are anxious about forgetting something you know, it will be hard to forget if you recall it again and again. Thus, you have to remind yourself of the object of meditation at moderate intervals in order to develop strong mindfulness. The way to strengthen your vigilance, which notices laxity and excitement, is to lock your attention on the object of meditation without distraction and then to monitor it. Realize that if you repudiate such a procedure by thinking this is discursiveness, it will be extremely difficult to develop powerful mindfulness and vigilance. And next is the length of distractions. Question: when you fix your attention on the object of meditation with mindfulness, is there a definite length for the session such that you say, I will stabilize my mind on the object only until then? Reply: on this matter, all earlier gurus of the various Tibetan lineages said that you have to do numerous short sessions. Why? Some say that if you meditate in group sessions and stop when it's going well, you will still be eager to meditate and do such each session. While if the session is long, you will become weary. Others explain that if the session is long, it is easy to fall under the sway of laxity and excitement, so it is hard to develop flawless concentration. Asanga's Sharvaka levels and other classic texts do not state the length of sessions clearly. However, Kamala Shila's third stage of meditation does say, while this statement occurs in the context of the length of sessions for cultivating insight after you've already achieved serenity, it is clearly similar when you are first achieving serenity. So do it this way. If you practice the techniques of mindfulness and vigilance explained above, reminding yourself of the object of meditation and monitoring your meditation at moderate intervals, it does not matter if the session is a little long. However, usually one of the two things will happen when you are a beginner and have a long session. On the other hand, you may become distracted due to forgetfulness. In this case, you will not recognize the occurrence of any laxity or excitement quickly, but only after a long period of time. On the other hand, though you may not lose your mindfulness, it is easy to fall under the sway of laxity and excitement, and you will not quickly recognize them when they occur. The first situation hinders the development of strong mindfulness. The latter hinders the development of strong vigilance. Hence, it is very difficult to stop laxity and excitement. In particular, failing to recognize laxity and excitement after you have become distracted due to forgetting the object of meditation is much worse than failing to quickly recognize laxity and excitement while not forgetting the object of meditation. So the techniques for maintaining mindfulness, the previously explained remedies which stop the breakdown of mindfulness and ensuring from distraction are very important. If you have great forgetfulness ensuring from distraction as well as vigilance so weak that it does not quickly recognize laxity and excitement, then your session must be short. If it is hard for you to forget the object and you can quickly notice laxity and excitement, it does not matter if the session is a little long. This is the idea behind Kamal Shila's statement above, that the duration of session is indefinite, 24 minutes and so forth. In short, since the duration has to comport with your mental capacity, Kamala Shila says, as long as you can. If temporary injury to your mind or body does not occur, set your mind in equipoise. If such injury does occur, do not persist in meditating, but immediately stop your session and then clear away the impediments in your mental and physical constituents. Then meditate. This is what the adepts intended. So recognize that doing this is an aspect of how long a meditation session should be. Next is dealing with laxity and excitement. What to do after you focus on object of meditation. This has two sections. First is what to do when laxity excitement occur. This has two parts. First is using the remedy for falling to recognize laxity and excitement, which has two sections. First is the defining characteristics of laxity and excitement. As Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge explains, what is excitement? It is an unquiet state of mind, considered a derivative of attachment, which pursues pleasant objects and acts as an impediment to meditative serenity. So you can see there are three aspects to this definition. One, its object is an attractive and pleasant one. Two, its subjective aspect is that your mind is unquiet and scattered outward. As it is a derivative of attachment, it engages its objects with a sense of craving. Three, its function is to impede stabilization of your mind on its object. When your attention is inwardly fixed upon its object, excitement, which is attached to form, sound and so on, pulls your attention helplessly toward these objects and causes distraction, as Chandragirmi's Place of Confession says. No caution. Is it excitement when there is scattering in which other afflictions distract your mind away from the object, or for that matter, when there is scattering toward other virtuous object? Reply. Excitement is a derivative of attachment, so being distracted by other afflictions is not excitement. Rather, it is the mental process of distraction which is one of the 20 secondary afflictions. Scattering towards virtuous objects may involve any virtuous mind or mental process, so not all scattering is excitement. Many translations render laxity as slackness, but this slackness should not be construed as meaning discouragement. As for its definition, most yogis among these noise peaks seem to consider laxity to be a lethargic state of mind that stays on its object of meditation without scattering elsewhere but lacks limpid clarity. This is incorrect, for lethargy is said to cause laxity, so the two are distinct, as Kamala Shila states. This states that when your mind becomes lax due to lethargy and sleepiness, it is distracted inwardly. So, Asanga's this states that when your mind becomes lax due to lethargy and sleepiness, it is distracted inwardly. Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge also discusses laxity in the context of the secondary affliction of distraction, but the distraction, as he explains it, may also be virtuous, so it is not necessarily afflictive. Of lethargy, then Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge says, what is lethargy? An unserviceable state of mind classified as a derivative of delusion. It works to assist all root afflictions and secondary afflictions. So this derivative of delusion is the heaviness and unserviceability of body and mind. Vasubandhu's Treasure of Knowledge auto commentary says, what is lethargy? The heaviness of the body and the heaviness of the mind, which are the unserviceability of the body and the unserviceability of the mind. Laxity means that your mind's way of offending the object of meditation is slack, and it does not offend the object with much vividness or firmness. So even if it is limpid, if your mind's way of offending the object is not highly vivid, then laxity has set in, as Kamala Shila states. I have not seen a clear presentation of the definition of laxity in the other classic texts. Laxity may be virtuous or ethically neutral, whereas lethargy is either an non-virtuous or ethically neutral mental obstruction, and it is invariably a derivative of delusion. Moreover, the classic text said that to dispel laxity, you must bring to mind pleasant objects such as the body of the Buddha or meditate on light so as to stimulate your mind. Therefore, you have to stop the object from appearing unclearly as though darkness were descending on your mind, and you have to put an end to the quality of attention which has become flaccid. You need both a clear object of meditation and a tight way of arranging the object. Neither a clear object alone nor transparency of the subject alone is enough. It is easy to recognize excitement, but laxity is hard to comprehend since it is not clearly identified in the authoritative classic texts. It is also very important because in this case it's a major point of misunderstanding concerning flawless concentration. Therefore, you should experience laxity with an exacting awareness, and on that basis examine it well and identify it in accordance with Kamala Shila's stages of meditation. The method for developing vigilance that recognizes laxity and excitement. It's not enough just to have an understanding of laxity and excitement. You have to be able to develop vigilance that accurately detects whether laxity or excitement is present during meditation. Moreover, by gradually developing powerful vigilance, not only must you develop vigilance that recognizes laxity and excitement as soon as they occur, you must also develop vigilance that recognizes them when they are on the verge of occurring before they have actually arisen. This is demonstrated by statements in the Kamala Shila's two stages of meditation. Until you develop such vigilance, you cannot reliably conclude that you have had flawless meditation free of laxity and excitement during a given period of time. This is because not having developed powerful vigilance, you cannot be sure whether laxity and excitement have occurred. Likewise, in a passage that begins, there is recognition of laxity and excitement. Maitreya's separation of the middle from the extreme says that you need vigilance in order to recognize laxity and excitement. Accordingly, if you have not developed vigilance, such as would preclude any fellow to recognize the presence of laxity and excitement, and then even if you try to meditate for a long time, you will pass the time under the influence of sudden laxity and excitement, failing to sense laxity and excitement while they are occurring. Question: how do you develop this vigilance? Answer: its most important cause is the process of maintaining mindfulness, which I explained above. If you can develop continual mindfulness, you will be able to avoid forgetting the object of meditation and becoming distracted. But since this prevents a prolonged failure to sense the presence of laxity and excitement, you can easily recognize laxity and excitement. This will be perfectly evident if you examine in terms of your own experience how long it takes to recognize laxity and excitement when mindfulness is impaired, and how quickly you recognize them when it is not impaired, as he said in Shantideva's Bodhisattva-avatara. The following course of vigilance is distinctive to the way to maintain vigilance. Focus your mind on a visualized image of the body, of a deity, etc., or focus on a subjective aspect, such as the quality of experience being simply luminous and aware. Then while you stay mindful, as explained above, hold your attention on the object while continuously monitoring whether it is scattering elsewhere. Know that this is critical for the maintenance of vigilance, as Shantideva says. Thus, with this method, you develop vigilance that notices laxity and excitement when they are on the verge of arising, while with the method of maintaining mindfulness, you prevent forgetfulness in which attention is distracted and slips away. Hence, you have to properly distinguish these two. Otherwise, if you practice as it's done nowadays, combining all this awareness with no understanding of their distinctions, I am afraid that the concentration resulting from a muddled course will itself be muddled. Therefore, it's very important to make a very precise analysis of this in accordance with each of the major authoritative texts, and then to determine it in your practice. Do not place your hopes on sheer determinations. Next is using the remedy for failing to try to eliminate them even when they are recognized. As explained above, you develop very powerful mindfulness and vigilance through proper use of the methods of maintaining mindfulness and vigilance. Vigilance is then able to notice even very subtle accident excitement, so there is no problem recognizing the occurrence of accident excitement. However, when you make no effort to stop those two as soon as they arise, your complacency or failure to apply yourself constitutes an extremely serious problem of your concentration. For if you practice in this way, your mind will form bad habits and then it will be extremely difficult to develop a concentration free of accident excitement. Therefore, to remedy your failure to apply yourself to the elimination of accident excitement, cultivate the intention called application or effort. This section has two parts. One, intention and the way that it stops accident excitement, and two, the underlying causes of accident excitement. Next is intention and the way it stops accident excitement. This is how you should understand. As Asanga's compendium of knowledge says, what is intention? It is the mental activity of applying your mind. Silenus is talking to a monk saying that you seem to experiencing you seem to be much exposed to cold, and so don't pretend that you're a tough guy, and make sure that you wear warm clothes. What is intention? It's the mental activity of applying your mind, having the function of drawing your mind to virtue, non-virtue, or the ethically neutral. This is how you should understand it. For example, iron feelings are compelled to move under the influence of a magnet. Similarly, the mental process of intention moves and stimulates your mind towards virtue, non-virtue, or the ethically neutral. So it here refers to an intention that applies your mind to the elimination of laxity or excitement when one of them occurs. Question: after you have thus aroused your mind to eliminate laxity and excitement, how do you stop laxity and excitement? Answer: mental laxity involves a very excessive inward withdrawal, leading to a slippage in the way you apprehend the object of meditation, so you should direct your mind to delightful things that cause it to expand outward. And this should be something like a very beautiful image of the Buddha, not something delightful that gives rise to affections. Or bring to mind an image of light, such as the sunlight, and this clears away laxity, immediately tighten the way you apprehend the object, and sustain that in meditation, as Kamala Chila said. In this situation, do not meditate on a disenchanting object, because disenchantment causes your mind to withdraw inward. So on the other hand, if you, for example, reflect on bodhicitta and so forth, it will raise the spirit of the mind and make the mind fresh and energetic, and you will develop a sense that there is internal growth of energy. So in this way, you should raise the spirit of the mind. If you find your mind is, the spirit of the mind is going down. Now, when you expand your mind by using discerning wisdom to analyze an object of your choice, this also stops laxity. This laxity or slackness is as follows: the state of mind, the two terms describes is called laxity because there is a decline in the way you apprehend the object of meditation. It is called slackness because there is an excessive withdrawal inward. Now, for example, in order to ensure that you do not experience laxity or mental dullness, it is also helpful to meditate meditate in a place which is slightly high, as some of the Dzogchen meditators do. It is called slackness because there is an excessive withdrawal inward. You counteract it by stimulating the way you apprehend the object and by making the object of meditation extensive so as to expand your mind. As Baba Viveka's Heart of the Middle Way states, in the case of slackness, expand your mind by meditating on an extensive object. And further, in the case of slackness, inspire yourself by observing the benefits of joyous perseverance. Also, Shantideva's Compendium of Training states, if your mind becomes slack, inspire yourself by cultivating delight. The great scholars and adepts are in agreement on this matter. So here is the most important remedy for stopping laxity. When you reflect on the good qualities of such things as the three jewels, the benefits of the spirit of enlightenment and the great significance of attaining leisure, it should have a bracing effect on your mind, just as cold water is thrown in the face of a sleeping person. This depends on your having had experience with designing analytical meditation on these beneficial topics. And if you cultivate a remedy for being accustomed to the underlying causes of laxity, namely lethargy, sleepiness, and something that induces this too, wherein your mind takes on a gloomy aspect, then laxity resulting from these causes will not arise, or if it has arisen, will stop. In this regard, Asanga's cervical level suggests such activities as going for a walk, holding an image of brightness in your mind and familiarizing yourself with it repeatedly, pursuing any of the six recollections, the Buddha, the teaching, the community, ethical discipline, and generosity and the deities, or stimulating your mind by means of other inspiring objects of meditation, orally reciting teachings that discuss the force of lethargy and sleepiness, gazing in different directions and at the moon and the stars, and washing your face with water. Also, if laxity is very slight and occurs only infrequently, tighten up your attention of the object and continue meditating. But if laxity is dense and seems to occur repeatedly, suspend your cultivation of concentration, clear away laxity using any of those remedies, and then resume your meditation. Now, whether your object of meditation enters directing your mind inward or outward, if the object is unclear and you have the sense of darkness, slight or dense, descending on your mind, then it will be hard to cut through laxity if you continue to meditate without eliminating it. Therefore, as a remedy for that, repeatedly meditate on the appearance of light, as Asanga's Charvaka level states. So since he says you should cultivate brightness even when the object of meditation is clear from the beginning, this is all the more true when it is unclear, as his Charvaka level states. Meditate on the sign of brightness not only while cultivating concentration but on other occasions as well. In the case of excitement, out of attachment, your attention pursues objects such as forms and sounds. So in response to that, bring to mind disillusioning things that cause your attention to be drawn inward. As soon as this calms the excitement, settle your mind on the earlier object of meditation. As also Shantideva is combined with attaining states, if excitement occurs, come it by bringing impermanence to mind. So if a very strong or prolonged excitement arises, it is crucial that you relax the meditation for a while and cultivate a sense of disenchantment rather than attempting to pull in your mind and direct it back to the object of meditation every time it becomes scattered. For excitement that is not too dominant, nor so dominant, draw in the scattered attention and fix your attention upon the object of meditation. And Asanga's text on the level say that the sutra passage, you focus your mind, refers to a remedy for excitement. It is generally said that if your mind is excited, you should focus on the object of meditation, while if it is relaxed, you should think about a delightful object. When your mind is excited, do not bring to mind inspiring and delightful objects, because this will cause your mind to be distracted. Next is the underlying causes of laxity and excitement, as Asanga's level of yogi states. What are the signs of laxity? Not restraining the sensory faculties, not eating in moderation, not making an effort to practice rather than sleeping during the early and later parts of the night, ongoing lack of air vigilance, deluded behavior, oversleeping, being unskillful, being lazy in one's aspirations, joyous perseverance, intention and releases, giving only partial attention to serenity without accustoming yourself to it and fully refining it, letting your mind stay as though in darkness and not delighting in focusing on the object of meditation. Here, signs of laxity should be understood as the causes of laxity. The word lazy applies to joyous perseverance, intention and analysis as well as to aspirations, as is stated in the same text. The signs of excitement are the causes of excitement. Uh, And the sense of excitement are the causes of excitement. A great grasping is an excessive mental hold on a delightful object. Aspiration, etc., refers to the four points: aspiration, joyous perseverance, intention, and the analysis explained earlier. Thus, the four practices of which restraint of the sensory faculties is the first, which were discussed earlier in the section on practice between meditation sessions, are important for stopping both laxity and excitement. Moreover, if you recognize those causes and try to stop them, this is obviously very helpful to interrupting laxity and excitement. Therefore, use vigilance to notice even subtle laxity and excitement. You should stop laxity and excitement in every possible way, not tolerating them in any form. Note your aspiration of separation of the middle from the extreme says that failing to do this is a fault of concentration called non-application. Now, some may gradually give up thinking. Slight excitement and distraction persist even though I cut them off at the outset, so I shall not cut them off. Or if laxity and excitement are not strong and do not persist for long periods, they may think, since they are weak and of brief duration, they do not accumulate karmic obstructions. So I do not need to cut them off. Those who think this way and fail to apply themselves to the elimination of these hindrances do not know the right way to achieve concentration, yet pretend that they do. They deceive those who aspire to concentration, for their approach places them outside the tradition of methods for attaining concentration laid down by teachers such as the Venerable Maitreya. Moreover, in terms of counteracting laxity and excitement at the outset, you will most often be interrupted by excitement and distraction, so strive to eliminate them. If by working on this you stop gross excitement and distraction, and then you will get a little bit of stability, at this point make an effort to guard against laxity. And if you are on guard against laxity with a heightened awareness, then excitement, more subtle than before, may again interrupt your stability. So strive to eliminate this. If you do stop it, then stability will increase. Then laxity will again arise. So try to eliminate laxity. In summary, withdraw your mind from scattering and excitement, inwardly fixing it upon the object of meditation, and seek stability. Each time stability occurs, taking great precautions against laxity and bring forth a vivid intensity, you will achieve flawless concentration. By alternating between these two, do not expect to attain stability by means of mere limpidity, which lacks the vividness that goes along with an intense way of apprehending the object. What to do when laxity and excitement are absent? By continuing to meditate after eliminating even certain laxity and excitement as explained above, your mind will enter a state of equipoise that is free from the imbalances of either laxity or excitement. At this point, it's a fault of concentration to apply on exert yourself, so cultivate equanimity as a remedy for this, as Kamal Shila's stages of meditation states. Question: how can it be that applying yourself or making an effort turns into a problem? Reply: through meditation, turning your attention inward, when your mind is excited and stimulating your mind, when it lax, you gain confidence that laxity and excitement will not occur during each suitable meditation sessions. At this point, you are still extremely wary of laxity and excitement, just as at the outset. Sustaining this is the problem. Your mind will become distracted, so at that time you must know to relax, as stated in Kamal Shila's second and third stages of meditation. If you exert yourself when your mind has entered a state of equipoise, then your mind will be distracted. This entails relaxing the effort, but not sacrificing the intensity of the way you apprehend your object. Therefore, this cultivation of equanimity is not to be done every time laxity and excitement are absent, but once you have reduced the force of laxity and excitement, for when you have not done so, there is no equanimity. We'll stop the morning session here. question, how can it be that applying yourself or making an effort turns into a problem? Reply through meditation, turning your attention inward when your mind is excited and stimulating your mind when it is relaxed. You gain confidence that laxity and excitement will not occur during each suitable meditation session. At this point, you are still extremely wary of laxity and excitement, just as at the outset. Sustaining this is the problem. Your mind will become distracted, so at that time you must know to relax, as stated in Kamala Shila's second and third stages of meditation. If you accept yourself when your mind has entered a state of equipoise, then your mind will be distracted. This entails relaxing the effort but not sacrificing the intensity of the way you apprehend your object. Therefore, this cultivation of equanimity is not to be done every time laxity and excitement are absent, but once you have reduced the force of laxity and excitement. So when you have not done so, there is no equanimity. Question: what sort of equanimity is this? Reply: generally three types of equanimity are taught. 1. The feeling of impartiality. 2. The impartiality that is one among the four immeasurables. And 3. The equanimity with respect to application. This is equanimity with respect to application, and its nature is to be understood in accordance with this passage from Asanga's Sarvaka Levels. What is equanimity? As your mind attends to objects of meditation, associated with serenity and insight, its focusing with coming settling, spontaneous mental engagement, a sense of mental well-being, effortless mental functioning after becoming serviceable, and a mental balance free from the afflictions. When you achieve such equanimity on those occasions when laxity and excitement are absent, as you cultivate concentration, stay with this equanimity and let your mind rest without exerting strong effort. The signs of this sort of attention are described in the same text. The time for cultivating equanimity is also set forth in that text. The above explanations of the method of developing flawless concentration are in accord with the Venerable Maitreya's teachings in the separation of the middle from the extremes. In those verses, staying with that refers to keeping up the output of joyous perseverance for the sake of dispelling unfavorable conditions. With this, a concentration in which your mind is serviceable arises. Moreover, since this is the foundation or basis of supernormal powers which achieve all goals, super knowledge and so forth, you attain all goals. What do you do to develop such concentration? It develops as a result of using the 8 antidotes in order to eliminate the 5 faults. These are the 5 faults. At the time of preparation, laziness is a fault because you do not apply yourself at concentration. When you are working at concentration, forgetting the instructions is a fault because when you forget the object upon which you were instructed to meditate, your mind is not set in equipoise upon the object of meditation. When it is set in meditative equipoise, laxity and excitement are false because they make your mind unserviceable. When laxity and excitement occur, lack of effort, non-application is a fault because it does not quell those two. When laxity and excitement are absent, the fault is the intention of application. Kamala Shila's three stages of meditation point out that there are 5 faults if laxity and excitement are treated as 1, 6 if they are listed separately. Among the remedies for those faults, the 8 antidotes, there are 4 remedies for laziness, confidence, yearning, effort and pliancy. Then the remedies for forgetfulness, laxity and excitement, non-application and application are, respectively, mindfulness, vigilance that recognize laxity and excitement, the intention of application and calmly established equanimity. I explained this extensively above. These are the most excellent instruction for achieving concentration. They are set forth in the great master's Kamala Shila's three stages of meditation, as well as many expositions on achieving concentration by other great Indian scholars. They are also explained in the discussion on achieving serenity in Adisha's commentary on his own lamp for the path to enlightenment. Earlier gurus of the stages of the path have conveyed a rough idea of these points, but those wishing to cultivate meditative stabilization have not understood how to proceed. Thus, I have set this further length. That mindfulness and vigilance remove laxity and excitement from your mind's one-pointed concentration is a common theme to all personal instructions on this practice. So do not think this is a teaching particular to the vehicles of dialectics, but it is not necessary in the mantra vehicle. For it is common to the mantra vehicle as well, since this is also stated in the class of the highest yoga tantras. That's the second chapter of the first section of the Gross Integration Tantra states. It also describes the three concentrations of enthusiasm, of analysis, and of the mind in the same way. Serviceable concentration, as explained above, is the basis for attaining qualities such as supernormal abilities. Therefore, since it is like a foundation, it is called the foundation of supernormal abilities. Texts such as Srimati's explanation of the separation of the middle from extreme explain that there are four avenues to accomplish this. 1. Achieving it through fierce yearning. 2. Achieving it through prolonged joyous perseverance. And 3. Achieving concentration by a discriminating examination of the object of meditation. These first three are called, respectively, yearning concentration, enthusiastic concentration, and analytical concentration. And 4. Achieving one-pointedness of mind, based on having in your mind seeds of earlier concentration, and this is called mental concentration. And very slack refers to excessive relaxation, and very elated refers to excessive tightness. The point is that you should sustain a meditation which lacks these two. Next is attaining serenity. The stages in which the mental states develop. In this section, there are three parts. The actual stages in which the mental states develop, the process of achieving them with the six forces, how the four attentions are involved in this. 1. The actual stages in which the mental state develop. These are the nine mental states. 1. First is mental placement. This entails thoroughly withdrawing your attention from all outside objects and directing it inwardly to the object of meditation, as Maitreya's ornament for the Mahayana Sutra states, after you have directed your attention to the object of meditation. 2. Continuous placement. Your attention that was initially directed to the object of meditation does not stray elsewhere but is continuously set upon the object of meditation. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutras, its continuity is not distracted. 3. Paced placement. If your attention is drawn away by forgetfulness and distracted outward, you recognize this and again fix it upon the object of meditation. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutras, swiftly recognizing distraction, it is paced up again. 4. Close placement. Kamala Shila's first stages of meditation comments that with the previous mental state, you recognize distraction and eliminate it. With this mental state, you have eliminated distraction and with effort, place your attention upon the object of meditation. And Ratana Karasanti's instructions for the perfection of wisdom asserts that your attention, which is by nature expansive, is repeatedly drawn in and refined, establishing ever greater stability. This is in accord with the statement from the ornament of the Mahayana Sutras, the wise withdraw their attention inward to ever greater levels. Asanga Sarvaka Levels explains that first mindfulness is applied and your attention does not stray outside. As the force of mindfulness develops, forgetfulness does not create outward distraction. 5. Taming. Reflecting upon the advantages of concentration, you take delight in concentration, the ornament for the Mahayana Sutras. Then, because you see the advantages, your mind is tamed in concentration. The Sarvaka Levels comments that if your mind is distracted by the science of any of the five sensory objects of visual form and so on, of the three mental poisons, attachment, hostility and ignorance, or of a man or a woman, you regard this 10 signs as disadvantages from the outset and do not let them scatter your mind. 6. Pacification. Regarding distraction as a fault, you quell any dislike for concentration. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutras, because you see the force of distraction, you quell dislike for the meditation. The Sarvaka Levels asserts that if your attention is disturbed by thoughts such as those concerning sensory objects and by secondary afflictions such as obstructions involving attraction to the sensory, you regard this from the beginning as disadvantageous and do not allow your attention to be drawn to your thoughts and secondary afflictions. 7. Complete pacification. This entails the fine pacification of the occurrence of attachment, melancholy, lethargy, sleepiness, etc. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutras, as soon as attachment, melancholy, etc. arise, they are pacified. The Sarvaka level says that if the thoughts and secondary afflictions mentioned earlier arise as a result of forgetfulness, you do not submit to all that appear but eliminate them. 8. One-pointed attention. This entails exerting effort so that you engage the object of meditation effortlessly. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutras, then one endows it with restraint and enthusiasm, applies remedies for the obstacles to his or her mind, and naturally achieves the ninth mental state. This is to be understood from the statement in the Sarvaka levels. By means of application, you have no hindrance, and since you continuously establish a flow of concentration, you make a single channel. Another term applied to the eighth mental state is single channeling, the meaning of which is easily understood. 9. Balanced placement. According to Kamalahila stages of meditation, this refers to the equanimity that occurs when your mind becomes balanced. Ratanakara Shanti's instructions for the perfection of wisdom says this refers to a spontaneous, natural attention and attainment of independence as a result of familiarity with single channeling. The ornament for the Mahayana Sutra states there is non-application due to familiarity with that. The Sarvaka level says your mind is concentrated, and the meaning of this is clearly stated in the same text. As a consequence of dedication, familiarization and frequent practice, you reach the path of both spontaneous and natural attention. With no application and with spontaneity, your mind enters into a flow of concentration that is without distraction. In this way, it is concentrated. The names of the nine mental states are in accord with the lines in Kamalahila's first stages of meditation. This part of meditative serenity is explained in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras and so on. Next is the process of achieving them with six forces. There are six forces: the forces of hearing, the force of hearing, the force of reflection, the force of mindfulness, the force of vigilance, the force of enthusiasm, and the force of thorough acquaintance. The method of accomplishing the mental states with these forces is as follows. 1. With the force of hearing, you accomplish mental placement. The reason for this is that due to following the instructions that you have merely heard from someone else about focusing on the object of meditation, at first you simply fix your attention upon the object, but this is not a case of familiarity due to your own repeated reflection. 2. With the force of reflection, you accomplish the mental state of continual placement, for as a consequence of the practice of repeated reflection on the continuation of the initial fixation of attention upon the object of meditation, for the first time you achieve the ability to maintain a little continuity. 3. With the force of mindfulness, you accomplish the mental states of patient placement and of close placement. For in the case of patient placement, when your attention is distracted away from the object of meditation, you are mindful of the previous object of meditation, and your attention is drawn back in. And in the case of close placement, you generate the power of mindfulness from the beginning, and this prevents your attention from being distracted away from the object of meditation. 4. With the force of vigilance, you accomplish the mental states of taming and of pacification. For with vigilance, you recognize the force of being scattered toward thoughts and the signs of secondary afflictions, and by regarding them as false, you do not let scattering toward these two occur. Now, 5. With the force of enthusiasm, you accomplish the mental states of complete pacification and of one-pointed attention. For by striving to eliminate even subtle thoughts and secondary afflictions, you do not submit to them, and by so doing, laxity, excitement, etc. are unable to interfere with your concentration, and you achieve continuous concentration. 6. With the force of acquaintance, you accomplish the mental state of balanced placement, for with the force of great familiarity with the above, you develop effortless natural concentration. These accord exactly with the intended meaning of Asanga's Savaka levels, so although there are alternative explanations, do not rely on them. The achievement of the ninth mental state can be understood in terms of analogy. In the case of those who are extremely familiar with the reciting scriptures and so on, if the initial motivation to recite arises and they begin, even though their mind is occasionally distracted elsewhere, the recitation continues effortlessly without interruption. In a similar fashion, once your mind is settled with mindfulness fixed upon the object of meditation, even if you do not continually cultivate mindfulness and vigilance, your concentration is able to focus continually for long periods of time without being interrupted by scattering. Since effort is not needed to maintain a continuous stream of mindfulness and vigilance, this is said to be without application or effort. For that to arise, in an earlier phase of practice, you continually and energetically cultivate mindfulness and vigilance. During that phase, it is necessary to produce a concentration that can be sustained throughout long meditation sessions without its being able to be disturbed by such hindrances as laxity and excitement. This is the eighth mental state. These and the ninth state are familiar in that they cannot be hindered by factors such as laxity and excitement that are incompatible with concentration. However, in this eighth state, you must uninterruptedly cultivate mindfulness and vigilance, so it is said to be associated with application or effort. For this to arise, you must stop your even subtle laxity, excitement, etc., as soon as they occur without submitting to them, so the seventh mental state is necessary. For this to arise, you must recognize that the distraction of thoughts and the secondary afflictions is a disadvantage, and you must have intense vigilance that monitors your attention so that it does not disperse to them. So the fifth and the sixth mental states are necessary for those who are accomplished with the strengthening of vigilance. Furthermore, for such mental states to arise, you must have mindfulness that swiftly recalls the object of meditation when you are distracted from it. And mindfulness that prevents distraction from the object of meditation from the very outset. So the third and fourth mental states are necessary, for you accomplish these two with those two kinds of mindfulness. For this to arise, your attention must first of all be fixed upon the object of meditation, and you must have an undistracted continuity of this fixation. So the first two mental states arise before the others. Therefore, in summary, first of all, follow the personal instructions that you have heard and correctly apply the method for setting your attention in a balanced fashion. Then repeatedly reflect on the way of setting your attention, and as you are able to bring together a little continuity, sustain a continuous stream of attention. Then if your mindfulness declines and you become distracted, swiftly draw your attention back in and quickly become mindful that you have forgotten the object of meditation. Then generate powerful mindfulness and bring forth the force of mindfulness that prevents distraction away from the object of meditation from the outset. By accomplishing forceful mindfulness and by seeing the force of laxity, excitement, etc., which distract the attention away from the object of meditation, develop intense vigilance to monitor your attention. Then when you are distracted by even subtle forgetfulness, recognize this immediately and stop it short, and upon eliminating it, generate the power of effort to lengthen the flow of attention that is uninterrupted by hindrance. Once that has arisen, you muster familiarity by meditating with effort, and you accomplish the ninth mental state in which your concentration becomes effortless. Therefore, until yogis attain the ninth mental state, they must exert effort to apply their minds to concentration. But upon attaining the ninth mental state, even if they expand even if they expend no effort for the purpose of settling the mind in meditative equipoise, their minds automatically become concentrated. Even in the case that this ninth mental state is attained, if balance is not achieved, then as will be explained later, if you are not even defined as attaining meditative serenity, how much less are you defined as achieving insight? Nevertheless, there are those who assert that when you achieve such concentration that is adorned with bliss, clarity and non-discursive awareness, you have brought forth a non-discursive sublime wisdom that integrates meditative equipoise and the post-make equipoise state. Further, as will be discussed later on, there are a great many people who specifically confuse this ninth mental state described in Asanga's Sharvaka Livers with the culmination of the stage of completion in highest yoga tantra. How the four attentions are involved in this? With respect to this ninth mental state, know that there are four types of attention. 1. Tight focus, 2. Intermittent focus, 3. Uninterrupted focus, and 4. Spontaneous focus. So during the first two mental states, the attention must be strenuously tight. So this is tight focus. Then during the phase of the next five mental states, there is interference by laxity and excitement, and you are unable to maintain long meditation sessions. So this is intermittent focus. Then since in the eighth mental state, you are able to sustain long meditation sessions without interference by laxity and excitement, there is uninterrupted focus. Then since in the ninth mental state there are no interruptions and no need for continuous exertion, you apply the attention of effortless focus. Question. In this case, during the first two mental states, there is interrupted focus, and during the intermediate five mental states, there is a need for tight focus. So why does one not speak of the attention of interrupted focus for the first two, and of the attention of the tight focus for the intermediate five mental states? Answer. In the first two mental states, there are occasions when your mind is not concentrated with considerably longer periods in the latter state, whereas in the intermediate five states, the duration of concentration is much longer. So the designation of interruption to concentration is used for the latter and not for the former. Therefore, although those two sets of mental states are similar in terms of the presence of tight focus, they are dissimilar in terms of the presence and absence of interrupted focus. So the five mental states are not included in the definition of tight focus. Thus, after you have established yourself in the preconditions explained earlier, you will achieve serenity if you cultivate continual joyous perseverance for accomplishing concentration. But if after you practice this only a few times, you discard the practice again, it is said that you will not accomplish serenity. Next is the measure of successful cultivation of serenity, which has three sections. The first is presentation of dividing line between accomplishing and not accomplishing meditative serenity. These two sections, first is a presentation of the actual meaning. Once you properly understood the means of cultivating concentration as explained previously and then sustained them in meditation, the nine mental states arise in sequence, and in the ninth state you are able to meditate for long sessions free of subtle laxity and excitement. Given that you have then achieved a concentration that becomes focused spontaneously without resorting to the effort of continual cultivation of mindfulness and vigilance, have you achieved meditative serenity or not? Answer. I shall explain. In the achievement of this concentration, there are those who do and those who do not achieve pliancy. So if pliancy is not achieved, this would be an approximation of meditative serenity, but would not be genuine serenity. Thus, it is called an attention that approximates meditative serenity, as is stated in the Sutta Unraveling the Intended Meaning, and also in the Ornament for the Mahayana Sutras by Maitreya. In this instance, attention refers to meditative serenity, as will be explained below in a citation from Asanga Sharvaka Levels. Furthermore, Kamalashila's second stage of meditation states that you must achieve both pliancy and the freedom to stabilize on the object of meditation. The second stage of meditation clearly indicates that the above citation also refers to the presence of pliancy. Furthermore, the equanimity explained in Maitreya's separation of the middle from the extremes among the eight antidotes has the same meaning as the ninth mental state referred to here. It states that that this alone does not suffice, and you need plans as well. All these citations also establish the meaning of the sutra, unraveling the intended meaning. Question: well then, which of the nine levels incorporates the concentration in which Francis has not yet arisen? Answer: this concentration is included in the level of the desire realm. This is because it is included in one of the nine levels of the three realms, and it is not at or above access to the first meditative stabilization. To achieve this access, it is certainly necessary to achieve serenity. Although there is such concentration without plans in the level of the desire realm, it is a concentration that is a level without meditative equipoise. The reason why it is not presented as a level of equipoise is that it is not accomplished with lack of regret, supreme delight and bliss, and with plenancy. Thus, without having achieved plans, even the mindfulness is not continually maintained. Your mind can automatically become non-discursive, and you can integrate this with all activities of moving, walking, lying down and sitting. This approximation of concentration is called a one-pointed mind of the desire realm, but understand that it is not fit to be presented as genuine meditative serenity. Question: well then, what are the means of achieving plenancy, and upon achieving it, how does it lead to serenity? Plenancy is to be understood in accordance with the explanation in Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge. Physical and mental dysfunctions are the unfitness of your body and mind for being employed to cultivate virtue at all. Their embodies physical and mental plenancy, until great serviceability in terms of applying your body and mind to wholesome actions, for you are free of dysfunctions of both the body and the mind. Moreover, physical dysfunction, which is included in the category of afflictions, interferes with your delight in eliminating afflictions. When you try to eliminate your afflictions, your body becomes unserviceable, with a sense of heaviness and so on. Once you are free of this, your body becomes buoyant and light. This is a serviceable body. Likewise, mental dysfunction, which is included in the category of afflictions, interferes with your delight in eliminating afflictions. When you try to eliminate your afflictions, you cannot experience pleasure in focusing on a virtuous object. Once you are free of this, your mind focuses on the object of meditation without resistance. This is a serviceable mind. In short, due to the unserviceability of the body and mind, even when you want to strive to eliminate afflictions, you do so arduously and with distaste, like someone unable to engage in work. When plans is achieved, this tendency stops and your body and mind becomes very easy to employ. Such complete physical and mental serviceability arises to a slight degree from the time that you start to cultivate concentration. This gradually increases until it finally turns into plenancy and one-pointed meditative serenity. At first, this is difficult to recognize due to its subtlety, but later on it becomes easy to recognize. The potent of the occurrence of easily discernible, perfected plans is this. Persons who are striving to cultivate concentration experience a sense of heaviness and numbness of the brain, but it's not an unpleasant heaviness. As soon as this occurs, they are freed of the mental dysfunction that occurs there, that obstructs their delight in eliminating afflictions, and mental plenancy, which is the remedy for this dysfunction, arises for the first time, as the Sarvaka level states. Then, due to the power of the arising of the plenancy that makes your mind serviceable, an energy that is a cause of physical plenancy courses through your body. Once this energy has pervasively coursed through the parts of your body, you are freed of physical dysfunction, and physical plenancy, which is the remedy for physical dysfunction, arises. Once this saturates the entire body, there is an experience of being as if filled with the power of this serviceable energy, as the Sarvaka level states. Now, physical plenancy is a very pleasant sensation within the body, not a mental process, as the Master Sthiramati states. Thus, when physical pains initially occurs due to the power of energy, there arises a great sense of well-being in your body, and on this basis there also arises in the mind a most exceptional experience of that pleasure. Thereafter, the force of the initial occurrence of pleasure gradually subsides. But this is not a case of pleasure becoming exhausted. Rather, this pleasure is coarse and excessively agitates your mind. So with this disappearance, there occurs a pleasure, tenuous like a shadow, that is compatible with steady concentration. And once the rapturous delight of your mind has disappeared, your mind stabilizes firmly upon the object of meditation, and you achieve meditative serenity which is free of the turbulence caused by great delight. When such things happen, you are said to have attention. You achieve serenity and you are included among the ranks of those who have achieved attention. For by achieving serenity, which is included in the access to the first stabilization, you achieve the smallest type of attention on the level of meditative equipoise. This accords with the statement in the cervical levels. The levels of meditative equipoise is synonym for the level of the two higher realms, the form and the formless realm. Next, the marks associated with attention and the elimination of qualms. These are the marks and signs to be known by yourself and others as the criteria for having achieved attention. You who have achieved such attention have these marks. 1. The achievement in small measure of these 4. Your mind belongs to the level of form, physical pliancy, mental pliancy, and one-pointedness of form. 2. The ability to purify afflictions either by the means of path bearing the aspects of calmness and coarseness or the path bearing the aspects of the truths. 3. Once your mind is established inwardly, meditative equipoise and physical and mental pliancy arise ever so swiftly. 4. For the most part, the 5 obstructions such as sensual desire do not occur. 5. When you rise from meditative equipoise, you still possess physical and mental pliancy to some extent. Thus the cervical level says, these are the marks of a novice who is endowed with attention. You achieve the small degree of a mind that experiences the form realm, physical pliancy, mental pliancy, and the small degree of one-pointedness of meditation. You have the opportunity and ability to practice with objects of meditation that purify afflictions. Your mind stream becomes smooth and you are enveloped by meditative serenity. And when your mind is perfectly drawn inward, settled and focused, mental and physical plans occur ever so swiftly. You are not afflicted by physical dysfunction, and for the most part, the obstructions do not operate. And even when you rise from meditation and move about, you still have a certain degree of physical and mental pliancy. Recognize such experiences to be purified characteristics and signs of possessing attention. After you have achieved attention bearing such characteristics, it is very easy for the path of serenity to be thoroughly pacified as follows. And after you have achieved equipoise in meditative serenity in which your mind is one-pointed, you are swiftly able to induce physical and mental pliancy so that pliancy increases. Commensurate with the increase of pliancy, one-pointed serenity increases so that they mutually enhance each other, as the cervical level states. Just as your physical and mental pliancy increase, so does your mental one-pointedness upon the object of meditation increase. And just as your mental one-pointedness increases, so does your physical and mental pliancy increase. These two phenomena, mental one-pointedness and pliancy, are based upon each other and are dependent upon each other. In summary, when your mind is serviceable, energy and mind focus is one, so the energy becomes serviceable. At that time, an extraordinary physical appearance occurs, and when this happens, exceptional concentration arises in your mind, which in turn brings forth an exceptional serviceable energy. Therefore, the process of physical and mental pliancy is as explained above. The elimination of qualm is as follows. Qualm. Accordingly, it is said of the non-discursive ninth mental state that even without continual effort at mindfulness and vigilance, your mind becomes concentrated. Moreover, you are endowed with an intensity of clarity that prevents even subtle laxity. And as in the earlier presentation of physical pliancy, there is concentration that yields outstanding well-being in your body and mind due to the power of serviceable energy. As explained in the above section on the marks associated with attention, for the most part, there is no movement of the secondary affections of sensual desire and so on, and even when you rise from meditative equipoise, you have the quality of not being parted from pliancy. In terms of the five paths, where does this occur? I reply, in the past as well as the present, there have been a great number of people who assert that when such concentration arises, it is generally to be placed on the Mahayana path. Specifically, they assert this as a contemplation in which the characteristics of the contemplation stage of the highest yoga tantra are perfected. They draw this conclusion upon noting the occurrence of a great experience of bliss in the body and mind, and based on a feeling as if one's entire body were filled with ecstasy due to the energy corresponding to the arising of pliancy, as well the attributes of non-dispersive awareness and great clarity. Now, however, when this is analyzed on the basis of the classic texts of the Venerable Maitreya, the Noble Asanga and so on, and the authoritative texts such as the Madhyamika stages of meditation, that clearly set forth the stages of concentration. It is not possible to place this kind of concentration even on the Hinayana path, let alone the Mahayana. For the cervical level states that even the mundane paths, which look to the aspects of calmness and coarseness for accomplishing the actual first stabilization, are accomplished on the basis of this concentration. Therefore, non-Buddhist sages, who by means of mundane paths free themselves from attachment to the level of nothingness and lower levels, must proceed to higher paths on the basis of this concentration. So this is a concentration common to both non-Buddhists and Buddhists. So basically the purpose of engaging in one-pointed meditation is to channel your energy. Just as if we send a stream of a river through many canals, and then their power will be reduced. But if you channel them and send it through one channel, then it will be much more forceful. So similarly, through one-pointed meditation, we are able to bring together the energy, which then we later use them for achieving success in various spiritual practices. Furthermore, if this concentration is imbued with the view that correctly knows selflessness and with the attitude of the determination to be free, which properly ascertains the force of the whole of cyclic existence, is repelled by the cycle of existence, and diligently strives for liberation, it turns into the path to liberation. If it is imbued with the precious spiritual enlightenment, it turns into the Mahayana path. For example, if the generosity of giving a single morsel of food to an animal and observing even one type of ethical discipline are imbued with these attitudes, they turn into the collection of merit on the paths of liberation and omniscience respectively. Nevertheless, in the case of this question, you do not investigate whether it becomes a path of liberation and omniscience in terms of its being imbued with other paths. Rather, you investigate which path it becomes by the very nature of concentration itself. Although there are inconsistencies between the Madhyamika and Chittamatra ways of establishing the object of the view of insight, in general there are no inconsistencies in their identifications of serenity and insight, or in the way develop knowledge of this in their mind streams. Therefore, the Noble Asanga states in its Bodhisattva levels, compendium of determinations, compendium of knowledge, and cervical levels, that within the context of the individual practices of serenity and sight, when serenity is accomplished, it is accomplished through the stages of the nine mental states. Moreover, since this is elaborately set forth in the cervical levels, these nine concentrations are not asserted as the means for accomplishing insight. In those treatises, insight is explained separately from the ninth mental state, and the means of accomplishing it are also explained separately in Asanga Sarvaka levels. Similarly, the Madhyamika Sri Yusha meditation texts and Ratanaka Sanji's instructions for the perfection of wisdom also separately discuss the path of serenity consisting of nine mental states and the path of insight. There are also no discrepancies between the statements in the teachings of Maitreya and the commentaries by Asanga. So all the great trailblazers are of one mind in this regard. Next doubt that is being raised is, although bliss and clarity are present in the concentration which is explained in the Sarvaka levels, it's merely serenity since there is no profound non-discursiveness awareness. But if non-discursive awareness is present, it becomes concentration on emptiness. Reply, by concentration on emptiness, are you referring to investigation the meaning of profound in the phrase profound non-discursive awareness by using your discerning wisdom to establish this definitively in theory and then focusing on this without discursiveness? Or are you referring simply to settling in non-discursive awareness and not analyzing anything? In the first case, I also assert such a practice to be concentration on emptiness. If you assert likewise, there is a distinction between those who have and those who do not have an understanding of the view of the way things are. Those individuals who have the view and sustain a non-discursive awareness upon settling in the view are practicing the profound concentration on emptiness. The meditation of those who lack an understanding of this view and meditate by not thinking about anything is not profound meditation on emptiness. It is valid to claim this distinction. Do not declare that all types of meditation in which you do not think about anything are meditative stabilization on the objectless or on the sandless or on emptiness.